This program was first broadcast on Arrow FM, Wairarapa's only community access media station, and shared on Access Media with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall from Stonehenge Aotearoa, and this is our night sky, and I've got Kay with me. Hello, say.
Hi.
Hello. And, oh, I don't have with me at the moment, not sure what's happened to him, is Keith Austin, but he may be turning up a little bit later. Always at this time, I'd like to thank Dan Broughton, who sponsors this program and keeps it all going. And, of course, the night sky, we're looking at the wonderful universe we have around us. But first of all, just to mention a couple of things about Stonehenge. At the moment, if you want to come out and visit us, we're open from Wednesday to Sunday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. And you could just turn up there and, you know, and do a self-guided tour. If you want to do guided tours, and that you do need to book, that's when you get someone like me to do a special program for you and take you around. And the other thing that we do, of course, are Star Treks, taking you around the night sky to teach the night sky. Anyway, in the early evening, you may have noticed it, once the sun has gone down, you can see two bright stars over there in the west. Well, one of them is Venus and the other is Jupiter. Right? So they're not stars at all, they're two planets. But you may have also seen on the news recently that there was a comet in the sky. And it's got this nice complicated number. Anyway, we call it just R3 Pan stars at this stage. And it is on the horizon, close to where you're looking down towards Venus and so on. Yeah, it's in that region there. But it's quite faint at this stage. Astronomers often get quite excited because it's brighter than the average comet, but it's certainly not something that you can see with the unaided eye. But what you need mostly is binoculars. For those of you watching this on TV, you can see a photograph taken of the comet from the Wairarapa here. So that's what it looks like. And its distance at the moment is 218,000 kilometres from us. That's when that photograph was taken. Now, that might seem a long way, but it's not really, is it, Kay?
No, it isn't.
In cosmic terms, it's actually relatively close to us. Right? And here's another lovely photograph I just brought up, showing you it when it's quite close to the Orion Nebula. So that should give you an idea. For those of you who are familiar with the Orion Nebula, for example, it give you a good idea of the size of the comet and as it appears at the moment. So I thought I should say something about comets today, because people use these words, comets, meteors and so on. So I thought today we'd actually talk about comets. And here again, you've got another beautiful photograph of a comet. So let's have a look at the important structures we're talking about. First of all, we've got the nucleus. That's right at the centre there, and it's not particularly large, all right? Just brought one up now. It's maybe 10, sometimes 20 kilometres in diameter, all right? So these are not titanic objects in size, all right? Most of them are quite small, all right? 10, 20 kilometres in size. Right? And they're made almost entirely of ice. There is some rocky particles, but mostly ice there. And as you can see, this one I just brought up now, which is a photograph, it looks a bit battered, which it would be when I talk about where it actually comes from. Then surrounding the nucleus, which I must point out, you can't see the nucleus with a little telescope. You'd have to have a really big telescope to see the nucleus itself. But round the nucleus, you've got the halo. And this is simply what happens here, is that as the comet approaches the sun, its outer layers begin to vaporize and clouds of water vapor escape and form this halo around the comet. A halo can be quite large, though. And next, of course, we've got the tail. Well, what happens is the energy from the sun, particularly the solar wind, blasts the material of the halo and sweeps it away from the comet, forming the tail.
Sweeps it away from the sun, doesn't it?
Yes, right.
Yeah, so the tail can be in front of the comet.
Exactly. That's you always get this impression that when you look at a photograph of a comet, well, that's the direction it's actually moving in. Here's actually a photograph of the tail of this comet at the moment. And you get that impression it's moving from left to right, but it could be walking in the opposite direction.
Right to left.
Right to left, yes, yeah. Sorry. That's me.
You're a bit wobbly, aren't you?
I am indeed, yeah. Yeah, now, the tail of a comet always points away from the sun, irrespective of the direction the object itself is moving in, right? It's because the tail is created by the solar wind and radiation from the sun, which blasts it away from the sun. Often, particularly when you get big, bright comets, we're looking at Comet West here at the moment, it becomes quite obvious when you begin to observe them that there's more than one tail. Right? So often they have two tails, and they're two different. The tails are made up of different things, and you can see that by the photograph. It's got different colours. First of all, we've got the particles. The dusty particles are left over, bits of grit and what have you, right? And they form the brown tail. And then you've got the gaseous substance, atomic particles, which are blasted in a slightly different direction. The reason for that is the gas tail marks the direction of the sun, which is being blasted at the moment. But as the comet travels around the sun, the material that's being blasted out into its tail stays behind and lays in the solar system.
We often see those as meteor showers and things later, don't we?
Yes, yes. I'm going to mention that a little later. We're going to have a look at what they actually call. Now, here's a lovely photograph of a comet here. And you can see as it's travelled along, its tail is being left behind in different places, mostly by eruptions on the sun, which have blasted the head of the comet and formed that tail. And then it's been left behind. So these are all little particles that are left behind.
Now, some of the comets get little jets, don't they, too?
Oh, yes. Yeah,
yeah, that cause irregularities in the tail.
Every one of them's unique. Mm. Every one of them would be different. So that gives you a good idea.
That's beautiful, actually.
Yeah. Mm. And, of course, what happens is that the particles from a comet get left behind in the inner part of the solar system, and every now and again the Earth bumps into them or vice versa. And when that happens, we have meteors. But every now and again, as we're going around the sun, we get meteor showers. And this is where the Earth crosses the path of a comet, where a comet's left all this debris in its
path. A little cluster.
Yes, right. Yeah. And then we get meteor showers. So, and I tell you what, meteor showers can be pretty awesome objects, can't they, Kay?
Yeah, they name the meteor shower by where it appears to be coming from. But it's a bit of a misleading thing in some ways because, you know, when you're driving into rain, all the rain seems to be coming from one spot hitting your windscreen, unless you've got fancy things on your car that stop that sort of stuff. But it's not really where the rain's coming from, and it's the same with this. It appears to come from the Orion constellation, and so they call them the Orionids, but they're not really. They're just coming out of the orbit and coming down and hitting us.
That's right. Well, with meteors, I should point out, the best time to see meteors, or what people often call shooting stars, of course they're not stars at all, is after midnight. And the reason for that is, if you imagine sitting on the Earth, being like in a car, in the early evening, as you're looking out into up into the sky, you're looking in front of the direction we're going. All right? Looking behind at night, we're looking away in the direction we've actually left behind. Okay, so for this reason, you're always going to see more meteors after midnight. The only time we see them most of the time is when they overtake us and hit us from behind. Yeah. Okay. So, but a meteor shower occurs, as I mentioned earlier, is where we cross the path of a whole comet, and then sometimes you can get these showers. And I'll tell you what, sometimes they can be absolutely awesome. And I remember being out once and seeing, and you just start off with 1 or 2 meters coming down, and then suddenly there's hundreds and hundreds of them coming down, like you're under bombardment. It's absolutely spectacular, and it dies out again quickly as well.
Because you're basically gone past that cluster.
That's right.
And you might strike it at exactly the same place the next year, yeah. And that's why they keep calling them the Orionids or the Geminids or...
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, because it's the same place in the orbit.
Yeah, as you go along, you seem to see everything. It seems to come, as Kay said earlier, meteorites appear to come from the same direction in space. That's, well, it's inside the solar system, actually. It's not out amongst the stars.
No, it just looks like that. It's actually our orbit.
Yeah.
Which place you are in the orbit as you're going around the sun. It's you're at the place where you're looking at the Orion, or you're at the place where you're looking at Gemini or whatever,
yeah.
And they appear to come from there.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Now, meteors, that. So let's have a look at the comet's origins, where they actually come from. So what we've got is these big icy bodies, right, 20, 30 kilometres in diameter, and then when they get near the sun, they get this big coma around them and a tail. And something which only started about 10 or 20 kilometres can end up virtually a million kilometres in length into space. They can be pretty spectacular objects. So where do they actually come from? Well, when we look at our solar system, what we've got is the planets, which we're all familiar with, orbiting around the equator of the sun. And if you look at the way in which everything rotates in the solar system, the sun rotates on its axis, the planets go around the sun in exactly the same direction as the sun rotates, and so on. And they all go around the equator of the sun. And this is because the planets were formed from a gaseous disk around the sun billions of years ago when the sun was being formed.
I think if you want to have an idea of what it might have looked like, take something like Jupiter or Saturn, which is pretty big, and look at all their moons going around them, because that's pretty much what it looked like, isn't it?
That's right.
Just on a bigger scale.
Well, once upon a time, that was part of a big disk of debris that was left behind when the sun was formed. And so in the early solar system, there would have been tons and tons, meters coming through all the time, right? And so that's what it was like a long time ago. But gradually over time, that area of the around the sun where the planets are has been cleaned, A, by the solar wind, which blasts small particles outwards into space, and, of course, the planets. But beyond the planets, that debris that was there at the beginning from which the planets are formed is still there. And the main one we call the Kuiper Belt. And for those of you watching this on TV, I've just pulled up a photograph of, oh, it's not a photograph, a picture of what it's like. And you can see it's beyond the orbit of Neptune. Right? In fact, Pluto, which has always been designated as a planet, is no longer, because we think that Pluto is actually part of the Kuiper Belt. It's actually simply one of the big icy bodies that's been... is coming a bit closer around the sun than the Kuiper Belt.
Possibly not even the biggest.
Yeah, no. And the Kuiper Belt consists of thousands and thousands of icy bodies. All right. But just like the planets, they're orbiting around the sun.
It's a little bit of an angle, though, Pluto, isn't it? You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm. That's
right. It's not quite...
It's tilted out, yeah.
Yeah, it's in a way, it's got a little bit more of the orbit that you'd have if you were... looking at a comet or something.
Yeah. Well, it may have been something that's just come too close to Neptune and has been thrown into an entirely new orbit.
Yeah, because everything else is basically on a level with, the midriff of the sun, but that one isn't.
Yeah.
It's on an angle.
That's right. So out there we've got all these cometary bodies moving around, but every now and again it might be due to a planet gravitational effect of something like Neptune or whatever, or collisions out there, an object gets knocked out and it can either fall in or outwards from the solar system. If it falls inwards, of course, we end up by seeing a comet as it comes in. So the Kuiper Belt, which is along the equator of the sun, is one of the main sources of planets. But that, the Kuiper Belt is not all that's there, right? And here we can see diagram of the Kuiper Belt. It starts from about 60 astronomical units. Now, an astronomical unit is the distance between the Earth and the Sun. So when I say 60 astronomical units, it's 60 times the distance between the Earth and the Sun, right? and which is, as you can see, is just beyond the orbit of Neptune. Pluto dives into it.
It's quite a long way. Because if you were driving in your car at 100 kilometres an hour, it would take you 170 years to get to the sun.
That's right.
So multiply that by another 60.
Yeah, that's right. And that Kuiper belt goes out to 1,000 astronomical units. So this is something we don't see of the solar system, is these thousands and thousands of smaller planetary-like objects, icy bodies. And some of them will be large, about the size of Pluto, as Kay was saying earlier. Right? So that's the Kuiper belt. But the Kuiper belt is not the end of it. That joins into an even bigger structure known as the Oort cloud. And what we're looking at here is the stuff that when the solar system was born, right? This is the debris that's been left over from the formation of the sun. So what we've got here is really ancient stuff.
Now, this is kind of like a hollow ball, isn't it, with a solar system in the middle?
That's right, yeah, it is.
Yeah, because looking at the diagram, it's not entirely clear.
And as it says there, the Oort cloud goes out to 50,000 astronomical units.
So it goes out that far in all directions.
Yeah. So there you are. There's this mighty structure there that we look at. And this is why astronomers are so interested. If a meteorite comes down or a particle comes down from a comet, suddenly you've got something is a true fossil. It's something that's going back.
Primordial. It's the
billions of years
from
time.
From the formation of the solar system itself.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, so the gases that come off it and that are really interesting to
understand
physicists and
the
things.
Origins of all things, including.
Yeah. Including us,
our planet and the Earth and so on, that the secrets are actually held in these objects. But, of course, we can't normally get them because they are so far away. Right? All right. But the interesting thing is this comet that's in the sky at the moment, in the evening sky, this R3 Penstars actually comes from the Oort cloud.
Oh, okay.
Yes. And that's unusual. Of course, this is the primordial stuff from which the solar system was formed, and so that's why...
Well, even the sun, if you're talking about the Oort cloud.
Yeah, it predates that, yeah. That's right. So that's one of the reasons, though. And of course, this thing's on an orbit, right? Yes, but it's going to... It comes close to us. Its orbit is 170,000 years.
Yeah, a little bit further than the sun, eh? Got another 3 zeros on it.
Well, that's right. So if you don't manage to see this comet, you've only got to wait 170,000 years and it'll be back again. Okay.
Probably look a bit smaller.
Yeah. So this object's going to go right out into the Oort cloud and then it's going to come back again eventually. Yeah.
So something's hit it somewhere along the line, hasn't it?
Yeah, something's caused it to...
Something's disturbed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the same with all comets. For some reasons, they've been knocked out of their normal path and they fall inwards. And, of course, it may be just something in the Oort cloud where they get too close to Neptune or something like that, which in turn deflects them more. And then if they travel down near the planets, they can get affected by other planets.
Or captured by Jupiter or...
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Some of them actually end up in the asteroid belt, don't they? Not all of the asteroids are rocky. Some of them are icy.
Well, that's right, because when we look at the solar system, we've got another belt there. We've got the inner planets, right? Mercury, Venus, Earth and Mars. And then we've got the asteroid belt, which appears to be, well, it's two arguments. One, it's a planet that never formed, or there are two planets there which have collided.
You know? Well, quite likely. I mean, with all those other collisions going on, why not?
Yeah. So we have got this ring around the sun there, which is the asteroid belt. But the asteroid belt, as it mentions, is made of rock, while when we're looking out at the Oort cloud, most of the stuff is
ice. We've got planets that have hit each other. One of them's upside down, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Mm. One of the planets. So if you've got enough force to knock a planet upside down, you probably create a lot of debris.
Well, the early solar system, when the planets were formed, or soon after planets were formed, would have been an awesome place. You wouldn't want to be there. And about the number of collisions taking place as material was swept up. This was declined over billions of years, but once upon a time, it would have been an inferno of collisions taking place.
It would have created a lot of energy. No wonder a lot of the things were actually quite molten originally.
That's right, yeah. Mm. Well, so they're wanderers. The comets we do see, they wander. And they wandered out of their natural orbits and they come down. This is a photograph of Comet Atlas that you can see there. But because they're wanderers, they're also harbingers of doom. Because every now and again, with an orbit of a comet, whatever, it's going to collide with a planet. And of course, the scary thing is, and plenty of movies have recently been made about it, one of these could collide with the Earth. And we're talking about a colossal amount of energy taking place. And of course, we know these have occurred in the past. We now know the extinction of the dinosaurs was due to a comet hitting the Earth. And what happens is that this object comes in and strikes the planet, and so much energy is released that over 80% of all the life on this planet was extinguished.
We've had that a couple of times, haven't we? It's gone up to 96% at times, just with the mass extinction.
Yeah.
I know we're in a mass extinction field at the moment, but that's us doing it.
And if you look at the, I hate to tell you this, folks, but if you look at the, on average, how often we get hit by a comet which does this, right? The last one occurred 65 million years ago.
So we're due for one, are we?
We're overdue.
Well, that's one way of getting rid of some of the politicians.
That's right. Well, that's it. And every current time this happens, of course, life has to be reset from zero virtually. But sometimes it survives. Obviously, what happened with this impact is that most creatures were destroyed, but some mammals
and birds. Things that became birds.
Yeah, have survived, and then they bred. Mm. And suddenly the world has then changed from the Jurassic period, as it were, in the Cretaceous.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't exist if it hadn't.
That's right, yeah, absolutely.
Because we probably would have been gobbled up by dinosaurs, you know, never evolved, really.
Well, dinosaurs have evolved into something.
To something that was
intelligent.
Well, who says they weren't intelligent? Yeah. But, you know, they might have had more adaptable legs and things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, this is actually a photograph of a real cometary body, right?
Mm.
When I talk about something 10, 20 kilometres inside, well, it's sitting there, and I think that the town underneath that is Los Angeles, I believe. So, hey, this is pretty big, this thing. But it's not just the size of the object, its mass, it's the velocity it's moving at. And a comet striking the Earth, right, because of that velocity, would release more energy than the entire nuclear arsenal of this world.
That's right, because when you destroy matter, you turn it into energy.
That's right. Mm. And right now, and that's why astronomers have been calling for more money for research to track down the orbits of comets that come in the inner part of the solar system to see if eventually you can work out if one of them is going to hit the Earth again. It will happen again. And as astronomers point out, if we know it's going to happen, maybe we can do something about it.
Hope we can do something better than having little puny nukes on board there.
No, but we'd
breaking it into a lot of little bits so that you get 100 explosions instead of one.
Maybe, I don't know. I mean, whether we do a giant.
It doesn't always help.
Explosion. It's actually a matter of slightly moving off course.
Yeah,
so
I know.
It doesn't actually hit the Earth.
Busting it up just means you get a whole lot of them coming in. You get a whole lot of damage in a whole lot of different places. Yeah. It doesn't work. Richard's right. You've got to give it a wee nudge.
So this is all science.
It's that big. What sort of nudge are you going to give it?
This is all science fiction in one sense, but it could be happening. It's only a matter of time.
I think the number of people in churches would increase remarkably with that thing.
It might not happen for another million or 2 years ago, but it could also occur in 3 or 4 years from now. It's just a matter. Because there's so many of these cometary bodies swarming around the inner part of the solar system in orbits that take them out to the Kuiper Belt and back again, and or to the Oort cloud in like the one we're looking at the moment.
It doesn't take a really big thing to make a lot of mess, though. Some of the smaller ones, because you're talking about turning matter into energy, some of the ones that look absolutely and utterly pathetic compared to something like that would make a heck of a mess.
Well, it's not just the mass of the object, it's also the velocity. And that's a good example is a bullet. You can hold it, play with a bullet in your hand, but once it's fired out of a gun, it can do a hell of a lot of damage, can't it? And it's exactly the same with a comet. And there's another lovely photograph in the future. That would be for the people who lived in New York or whatever it is. That's the last thing they would ever see.
You wouldn't have to worry about it for long, would you?
No. Pretty horrendous thing. And it's not science fiction. Yeah. Okay. Well, they were harbingers of doom, but also, we're also pretty certain that the comets are the bringers of life. Because as they break up and they descend down, studying the particles we found in of stuff that has landed on the Earth, we find the building blocks of life itself. So what many biologists believe now is the origin of life actually came from out there, from comets, and where the in complex molecules are formed from the radiation from the sun over millions of years, and then these particles in when the meteor comet hits the Earth, they end up on the Earth and develop from there.
Do they still think that most of the water in the oceans came from comets?
Yeah, almost certainly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Because I can remember that a few years ago that was a theory, but sometimes the theories depart.
Yeah. This is right. We're talking about the origin of the solar system, the origin of the Earth, and of course it's something that happened 4.5 billion years ago. We're trying to work out what's happened. Technology up to now has not been good enough to observe this happening around another star, a baby star. But we're getting there now, you know.
Mm.
Yeah. So there you are, the bringers of life. They come down.
Not everybody's... And every culture saw them as a sword of Damocles or something that was going to destroy you. There were peoples like the Polynesians who saw them as a great, not a feather, but a great sort of sign in the heavens, but not necessarily of destruction.
That's right, yeah, but they weren't. It's only in recent times we realised that they've got the two sides of these things. And
but you find them and, you know, they buy a tapestry and things as a symbol of doom. One of the kings, the two kings fighting each other and one is going to die. Well, you've got to be 50% right, don't you?
That's right.
One of them's going to go.
That's right. So there you are. Are these things, that meteor coming down, it could be bringing alien life down with it as well. We just don't know. And whether suddenly something weird appears on the Earth, a biological structure which we have never seen before.
It's going to be made out of the same basics.
Big disease. Did that come from outer space? Who knows?
Well, they think some of them have, don't they?
Yeah,
some of them have. They've kind of investigated and matched them with various things that were happening with things falling down on the Earth, and they matched.
Yeah, because things are fine, but suddenly a plague occurs. Well, why did it take so long to occur? Maybe because the thing wasn't here in the first place. It's arrived from space, so who knows?
It wouldn't be one that we knew about, like Yersinia pestis or the plague that we know.
Yeah.
It would have been something, it'd have to be something new.
Yeah. And there's a lovely photograph of a comet over, Comet McNaught over Stonehenge.
That's a real picture too.
Yes, that is, yeah. Anyway, look, I'll have to shut up now, folks, because we're running out of time. But anyway, we better go back and have a look at this later. Just to remind you that we've got the winter solstice coming up, Sunday, June the 21st, and at 4 p.m. we're going to be doing a special presentation on the tales of the winter solstice, and hopefully, if the sky's clear, we'll go out and see the sunset at Stonehenge at the solstice. And then, of course, following not far behind that, we've got Matariki coming, and the legends of Matariki, which actually formed the basis of so many things of people, not just at the Maori down here, Polynesians, but people from around the world. And that's on Friday, July the 10th, starting at 4:30 p.m. But, folks, you can always check these things out later by having a look on our website, okay? Having said that, good day, and we'll catch up with you later.